Book Talks by Carmina, more than just a book review. Go beyond the written word to discover great content and its authors. Insightful excerpts, relevant info, plot summaries, curious information, interviews, discouraging books as classics and bestsellers, biographies, and personal improvement. Book Talks, your audio literary review. Welcome to the first episode of Book Talks. I'm your host, Carmina, and I'm very excited that you decided to join because I'm going to talk about one of my favorite authors, Edgar Allan Poe, and his poem, The Raven. But before we begin, I want to invite you to follow me on Twitter at Carmina De Alva, as well as Facebook and YouTube. And there you will find pictures and links that complement this podcast. And to set up the ambience for what's to come, I want to leave you with a brief musical introduction from one of Edgar Allan Poe's musical contemporaries, Beethoven, and one of his most popular compositions, Bagatelle No. 25 in A minor, commonly known as For Elise. Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore, merely this and nothing more. We just heard a line from one of the most famous poems in American literature, The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Welcome to the first of many episodes in this literature series, and what better way to start than to talk about one of North America's most famous writers and his amazing work. This episode's a little different than the rest because it focuses more on the author than on his work, and part of the reason for that is because I want to honor his memory. The way I approach each podcast is very similar, and this one is divided into 5 sections, and I will outline them for you. First, I will start with a historical description of the era in which the author lived, and that includes who were the important political figures at the time, important events, the painters, musicians, and other writers that were around. And that should give you a frame of reference of what was going on during the time Poe was alive. Second, I will point out the literary genre that he represents, and this will give you an understanding of his work. I will follow with a short biography, perhaps information that you already know about him, and some new and interesting information. Four, you will then listen to a beautiful narration of the poem as read by Michael Scott, and I will then proceed to dissect and explain specific parts of it. And finally, we will brush up on some of Poe's other writings and the influence he has on today's culture. This is going to give you a very complete understanding of who the author was, what the poem is about, and it will guide you on your way to appreciating other works by Poe. So without further ado, let's just get started. The birth and life of Edgar Allan Poe takes place from 1809 to 1849. So if you do the math, this is a span of 40 years. Let's place ourselves at the beginning of the 19th century, which is a very good place to begin. That's the 1800s. This is a period in history that is marked by the collapse of several empires around the world, as is the case with the Spanish, the Chinese, and the Holy Roman Empire. As a matter of fact, around the time that Edgar Allan Poe was born in 1809, Napoleon Bonaparte was in his last decade of leadership in Europe. In the early 1800s, we are at the height of the Industrial Revolution, and this is an era of inventions, great discoveries, and significant developments. So, Poe was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and at the time, this is the third most populated town in the United States. This is a bustling seaport, and it's a cosmopolitan center, which had been pivotal in the independence of America. And let's remember that America at the time is in its 22nd year of being independent from the British, so we can say that we are still a young nation at that time. But what are the state of events at that time? Well, we still have slaves in America, although slavery was already in its decline in Europe. We don't have electricity yet, so people would light their homes with candles and oil lamps. Cooking was done over an open fire or in a fireplace. There were no cars, so people used covered wagons, horses, and buggies or boats to get around. The train didn't even exist, as the first passenger train didn't come into being until the 50s after Poe had already passed. Bicycles were not invented until 1817. Photography wasn't invented until 1827. Refrigeration was not possible until 1824, and the first typewriter appeared in 1829. So think about how different life was back in the time of Poe compared to ours. Now let's talk about tuberculosis, or the White Plague as it was referred to. I mention this because it has some relevance in Poe's life, as many people he loved died of it. This disease was thought to be a hereditary disease rather than a contagious one, and there was no cure for it. During the 1800s, also, the inefficient water sewage system led to the outspread of infectious diseases such as cholera, yellow fever, malaria, diseases that are almost eradicated today in America. But back in the day, they were deadly. So, who are the people that are alive at the time of Poe's birth? In politics, Thomas Jefferson is leaving the presidency when Poe was born. We mentioned Napoleon Bonaparte, who is also at the end of his conquest spree. In the arts, Beethoven is at the apogee of his career. The Spanish painter Francisco Goya is in his later years. Washington Irving, the Grimm Brothers, Jane Austen are popular writers during this time. Rossini, the composer of the opera Otello, is making waves in Europe, and so is Franz Schubert. But perhaps some of his influencers in writing were late Enlightenment authors like Donatien de Sade, also known as the Marquis de Sade, Jonathan Swift, and Daniel Defoe. English romantics such as William Blake and Mary Shelley, and German romantics like Johann Goethe and Gottfried Berger, and the poet Lord Byron. And let's mention a few of the famous people in history that were contemporaries of Poe. In the same year he was born, so was Abraham Lincoln, just a few days his junior. Charles Darwin was also born in this year, and so was Louis Braille, the inventor of the writing system for the blind. Cyrus McCormick, the inventor of the crop reaper, the writers Edward Fitzgerald, William Blake, and Nikolai Gogol, and not far behind, Walt Whitman, Richard Wagner, the famous composer, Charles Dickens, and Karl Marx. In the visual arts, we have Eugene Delacroix and also J.M. W. Turner, who are both painters. But enough of the name dropping, and before we move on to the second part of the podcast, I want to mention that the background music includes pieces from Beethoven, Liszt, and some other music that Poe was probably familiar with at that time. So, as far as the cultural movement of the time, we are moving away from neoclassicism, the era of enlightenment, the age of reason, and we're moving into a new movement that revolutionized the arts in Europe and America. Romanticism is taking hold. And let's not confuse this with the word romantic, which is an adjective. Romanticism is an arts movement that began somewhere around the end of the 1700s in Europe, and it is seen as the era of counter-enlightenment. So let me point out the five main characteristics of the movement in literature. One, there is a shift from faith in reason to a faith in the senses, intuition, feelings, and imagination. And all this helps us transcend the boundaries that are set by rational thinking. It helps us understand the truth instead of just making conclusions based on what we see or derive by logical reasoning. There is also an emphasis on introspection, sort of like encouraging our dreamy inner selves in meditation. And Poe's work certainly evokes some of that. There is an emphasis on psychology, melancholy, and sadness. And the third aspect is the literature becomes a lot more subjective and personal at that time. Also, art often deals with death, transience, and mankind's feelings about these things. And lastly, romanticists were interested in the medieval past, the supernatural, the mystical, the gothic, and the exotic. So for those familiar with Poe's work, you can see that he's definitely part of this movement and is influenced by it. Poe became an ambassador for dark romanticism, which is a literary subgenre of romanticism, and this has its roots in the Gothic art motif originated in Germany, which combines both romance and horror. Poe brought it to the United States and he personalized it, but he famously stated though, and I quote, "Horror is not of Germany, but of the soul," making it clear that he wasn't just copying Gothic themes from abroad. So Poe uses what is there and was there before him as a launching platform, but he expands on it. Poe is a Gothic writer who wrote prose and poetry. He also wrote short stories. He contributed towards literary criticism because he was an editor and a literary critic. And I make that distinction because they're all writing indeed, but not all writers generate work in all those different areas. Poe's writings are dark and mysterious. His main themes are love and death, and he uses misery, adventure, emotion, imagination, and idealization to achieve a romantic effect. So although Poe is still much connected with romanticism and its emotional aspect, and the tales usually come in the form of a psychological dilemma, he also uses rationalism in his storytelling and mixes the metaphysics with science. And here it's important to note that Mary Shelley, which I mentioned before, and who wrote Frankenstein back when Poe was around 9, probably made a significant impact on Poe. Now, Poe also leans towards unordinary and unrealistic writings that deem his work imaginary, and for those specific reasons alone, that separates him a bit from romanticism. Additionally, in Poe's writings, there is little room for optimism, and he didn't like wrong narratives, which are characteristics of early romantic writers. So he really had a distinctive style from other writers of the time, and that makes him particularly special, and we will discuss his legacy towards the end of the podcast. But let's move on and talk about Poe's life. I already told you Poe was born in 1809. He was born on January 19th in Boston, Massachusetts, and he was named Edgar Poe. Both his parents were actors, and Poe had an older brother Henry and a younger sister Rosalie. His story begins with the loss of his parents by age 3. Apparently both of them died, and for some reason rather than staying with relatives, he was sent to a foster home in Richmond, Virginia. This was the home of a rich merchant named John Allen and his wife Frances. He was taken in by them and baptized by the name of Edgar Allan Poe, although he was never legally adopted by them. So John was apparently very stern with Poe, but the mother, Frances, on the other hand, was very fond of him. And Poe was sent to study in the best schools, and as a young boy, the family even lived in London. And this is very important because that's one of the reasons a good amount of his stories take place in Europe, and also the characters of his stories are often well-to-do people. So John would rear Poe to be a businessman and a Virginian gentleman, but Poe had dreams of being a writer. Some accounts say that by age 13, he had written a compilation of poems, but Allen wasn't about to help him publish them. The family ends up moving back to the United States, and Poe got engaged to Sarah Elmira Royster at the age of 17. But before he marries her, he goes on to attend the newly opened University of Virginia to study ancient and modern languages. This university was about 1 year old at the time, and it had been established on the ideals of its founder, Thomas Jefferson. So it was very strict. It had strict rules against gambling, guns, tobacco, and alcohol. and Poe claimed that Allen had not given him enough money for his expenses, so he begins to gamble. So whether one is cause of the other or not, we know that Poe's debts just made it impossible for him to stay there and that John doesn't help him either. When he comes back home, he finds that his fiancée is engaged to someone else and the relation with John is just filled with hostility, so Poe leaves the Allen household and, unable to support himself, he enlists in the United States Army as a private. He uses another name and claims that he is over 21, but he is really only 18. That same year, he released his first poetry book called Tamerlane and Other Poems. And he uses a byline for that. He says it was written by a Bostonian. Only 50 copies were sold, and the book received virtually no attention. To date, there's actually only 13 copies left. After some time in the army and knowing he wasn't going to move up, he sought to end his enlistment early, so he revealed his real name and his circumstances to his commanding officer, but the lieutenant would only allow Poe to be discharged if he reconciled with John Allen, who was ignoring all his pleas. During this time, Poe's foster mother became ill of tuberculosis and died in early 1829, and Poe learned of it too late and arrived the day after her burial. Through a letter, we know that Frances really wanted to see Poe before she died. And let's remember that this was the only mother that Poe ever knew. So this must have been very sad for him. And at that point, John, perhaps moved by the recent loss of his wife, he agrees to support Poe and he helps him get discharged and get into the military academy at West Point. So before Poe goes into West Point, he publishes a second book. Poe goes on to West Point and he finds out that Allen remarried and he writes to him detailing all the wrongs he felt that John had committed against them and threatened to get himself expelled from the academy. And he does. He succeeds. He gets himself dishonorably discharged by intentionally neglecting his duties. It's definitely a form of rebellion from this teenager. And at that point, he goes to live in Baltimore at the impoverished household of his Aunt Maria Clem, who is a widow. And Maria had a son, Henry Clem, and a daughter, Virginia Eliza Clem, who at the time was 7 years old. And it is said that this girl initially used to carry letters for Poe's lovers. There were other relatives of Poe living in this house as well. His grandmother Elizabeth Kearns Poe and his older brother William Henry, who suffered from tuberculosis and died in 1831. John died soon after, and Poe was not included in the will. John left his fortune to an illegitimate child that he didn't even really know, so that must have been another blow for Poe to feel so rejected from this man that had been a father figure to him. Moving on, Poe then wins a $50 writing contest in Baltimore for his short story, MS Found in a Bottle. And it is here where he really starts growing as a writer. There is a misconception that Poe wanted to support himself with writing alone. However, he did sought out many writing jobs throughout his life, and he held many editorial positions at literary journals and at magazines. However, it was always for brief periods of time, and some of this might be attributed to his alcoholism. In 1836, when Poe was 27, he married his 14-year-old cousin Virginia Clem, that little 7-year-old girl that years later was delivering his mail. Apparently, they had gotten married in secrecy the year before, but this was his official public wedding, and it's believed that he didn't consummate the marriage until she was 16. But I personally think that age really was not the problem here, but the fact that she was his first cousin. Poe and Virginia had 3 children, Henry, Edgar, and Rosalie, and by all accounts, it seems they were really in love with one another. Throughout their life, Poe was said to pursue other women, and that's something that, I mean, what can I say? Some things are just never going to change. But anyhow, Virginia remained very much so the love of his life. So Poe continued writing, shifting now mostly to prose. And beyond horror, he also wrote satires, humor tales, and hoaxes, and I will mention one of them in a bit. As a literary critic, he developed a fearless reputation, oftentimes not only critiquing, but also insulting authors. So this earned him the animosity of an American anthologist, editor, poet, and critic, whose last name is Griswold. And I guess their rivalry grew over the years. They both criticized each other, and they even competed for jobs in the same journals. And after Poe's death, this man wrote an unsympathetic obituary, and he even tried to discredit Poe by writing a biography, which helped spread the misconception that Poe was a drug addict and a madman. In 1842, Poe meets Charles Dickens in Philadelphia. Dickens was on a tour, and Poe had been a fan of him, so he managed to ask for a meeting, and he goes and speaks to him twice. Dickens, at the time, is already an acclaimed writer. He is 30 years old, and Poe is just 2 years older, but he doesn't hold the same stature. Through a letter exchange that took place after that visit, we learned that Poe had asked Dickens for help with editors in London so that he could publish some of his work there. And whether Dickens really tried or not is uncertain, but he claims his efforts were in vain. That same year, though, Virginia becomes ill with tuberculosis. And this is yet another blow for Poe, who just really gets depressed and also takes on drinking heavily. Now, during his life, Poe moved around a lot in search for opportunities. He lived in Richmond, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and even New York City. So if you live in any of these cities, you can visit museums or landmarks dedicated to Poe. Or if you just go there for a visit, you can go, for example, to the oldest standing home in Richmond, the Old Stone House, and this is the home of the Edgar Allan Poe Museum. In Baltimore, you can visit another house and museum where he was supposed to have lived when he was 23 years old, and you can visit his burial site at the Westminster Burial Ground. In Philadelphia, there is the Spring Garden Home, which is preserved as the Edgar Allan Poe National Historic Site. And in New York, you can visit the Edgar Allan Poe Cottage in the Bronx. And I want to mention that when Poe moved to New York City in 1844, he introduced himself to the city by perpetrating a hoax. He published a fake news story of a balloon trip across the ocean, and this caused a sensation. The public rushed to read it, and they wanted to know everything about it, and then Poe revealed that he had fooled them. This was sort of like a marketing ploy and definitely a very clever thing to do on his part. And this kind of reminds me of Orson Welles' prank in a way. Poe also became an advocate for writers' higher wages and an international copyright law. At that time, a lot of writers' work was just plagiarized or published abroad at will without any benefit to the actual writer. He also aspired to owning his own journal, and in 1945, he becomes the sole owner of the Broadway Journal, but this was shortly outlived because he was unable to keep it running due to lack of funds. He had also proposed a journal called The Stylus a few years before, but he could never raise enough funds for it. That same year of 1945, Edgar Allan Poe's famous poem, The Raven, is published in the New York Evening Mirror. He was paid $9 for it, and the poem was then reprinted in other journals. This poem turned Poe into a national sensation and gave him international recognition, but it did not bring him significant financial success. This new gained popularity resulted in invitations to recite The Raven and to lecture in public and at private social gatherings. And in his own words, though, he lamented. He said, "I have made no money. I am as poor as I ever was in my life, except in hope, which is by no means bankable." 2 years later, after publishing The Raven, Virginia, his wife, died. After her death, Poe entered into a deep depression and his alcoholism worsened. He went on to write other pieces. He also had a suicide attempt in 1848, and he also courted other women. One of them agreed to marry him if he gave up alcohol, but he just couldn't. He then runs into Sarah Elmira again. Remember that woman who got betrothed to someone else when he was 17? Well, she was a widow now, and she also agreed to marry him. At this point, it's been 2 years after the death of Virginia, and Poe is 40 years old. So you can see we're coming to an end here. Poe moves down back to Baltimore, apparently, so that he can wed this lady. And we know of all of this through correspondence that was shared between them and friends. It is also alleged that he was still hung up on creating his own journal, The Stylus. He makes the move down to Baltimore on September 27th, but he disappears for a few days. On October 3rd, he was found in a state of semi-consciousness, and he died on October 7th. To this day, The causes of his death are still unknown, but some people attribute it to alcohol or even rabies. Edgar Allan Poe had a very harsh life, and he had several pivotal losses, starting with his biological mother, his foster mother, his brother, his wife, his father rejecting him, and this had a lot of influence in his writing. If you learn to understand the emotions that he put into his work, then you will also be able to get the full meaning from it. And with that said, I want to move on to this poem, The Raven, here narrated by Michael Scott.
The Raven, written by Edgar Allan Poe, narrated by Michael Scott, produced by ThoughtAudio.com. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "Only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore. For the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This is it, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore.
Lenore. Lenore. Lenore.
This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore.
Lenore.
Lenore. Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see, then, what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more." Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched above a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou," I said, "art sure no craven. Ghastly grim, an ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore, Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore,
nevermore, nevermore.
Much I marveled this ungainly, foul to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast above the sculptured bust, above his chamber door, with such name as Nevermore.
Nevermore, nevermore.
But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore,
nevermore, nevermore.
Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore,
nevermore, nevermore.
But the raven still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking, nevermore,
nevermore, nevermore.
Then I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall pass ah, nevermore.
Nevermore, nevermore.
Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim, whose feet falls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he has sent thee. Respite, respite, and nepenthe thee from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore,
nevermore, nevermore.
Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore,
nevermore, nevermore.
Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore,
nevermore, nevermore.
Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore.
Nevermore, nevermore.
And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting, still is sitting, on the pallid bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Nevermore, nevermore.
Wow. Really just the beautiful piece of work, and so well read too. And this really evokes so many feelings for me, and I'm very interested in knowing how this poem makes you feel. So I invite you to tweet me your comments at Carmina de Alva or post on my Facebook page. I will make sure to mention some of them at the beginning of a future podcast. Moving along, let's do an analysis of the poem now. I'm sure we all understand the gist of the poem, but just as a recap, the narrator is perceived as a young man, a lectured man, or a student perhaps. He is in mourning for the death of a woman, and a mysteriously talking raven comes to stay permanently and serves as a reminder of his loss. That's a very simplified way to put it, but let's just go into a few of my favorite details. As far as the way the structure goes, and this is something Poe publicized in an essay a year after The Raven was published, he claims to have written the poem very logically and methodically, so that it appealed to both the public and the critics' taste. Poe borrows the complex rhythm and meter of another writer's poem and makes use of internal rhyme as well as alliteration. And alliteration is a repetition of a particular sound in a series or word or phrases. So let's see if you can guess which one it is in The Raven. He also notes the exact structure of it so that it sets for the tone and the pace of how the poem should be recited. Also, the use of the raven was inspired in part by one of Charles Dickens' novels, Barnaby Rudge. But he also mentions that he thought of using a parrot first, and then he went for the raven because of his dark, traditionally magical sign of ill omen. And the raven is important because it sets the tone for both the delivery and the interpretation of the bird's sinister message. Without the existence of something that might have been perceived as too supernatural. Also, he repeats the word nevermore, and this gives the poem a sense of circular motion, which in Poe terms gives it the unity of effect, where large meaning is added with each word and line. The topic of the poem is clearly death, and Poe, along with other writers, believed that the death of a beautiful woman was a very poetical thing because it was paired up with beauty. Elements of Gothicism are also evidenced in how the poem begins in a small, confined space with a sad and lonely character in a somber mood. There's also a lot of symbolism through the poem, taking this poem to a higher level. The most obvious symbol is, of course, the raven itself, which we already discussed, the time when the action takes place, which is midnight, and that's an hour that's associated with darkness, in December, which symbolizes the end of something or a beginning, for that matter. The poem also is very allegoric to Greek and Roman poetry, and without getting too much into the details about that, there is some influence from classic poetry in terms of style. He writes about the bust of Pallas. It's just a sculpture. It's just the head of Athena, which is the goddess of wisdom. Plutonian Shore, for example, refers to the Roman god Pluto, the messenger from the afterlife or god of the dead. So this young man, who is clearly in mental turmoil for his loss, sees this raven and attempts to rationalize his experience with explanations. I used to think before that the raven was perhaps Lenore, but I see that that's not the case, and in reality it feels like a very distasteful practical joke played on this man. He realizes the bird can only mutter one word, which is nevermore. And it seems like the narrator doesn't want to forget his loss, so he keeps asking questions and phrasing them in a way that he knows will yield a negative answer. And this is sort of a form of self-torture, if you can see the meaning in that. I personally feel that when you lose someone, remembering they're gone is always painful, but that's how you keep them in your memory and close to your heart. So now as far as the name Lenore goes, there is no real evidence that this was an actual person. I just feel that he was already fearing the loss of his wife that was already so sick, so this might have also been part of the inspiration that led him to write this poem. Now, Poe had a very extensive vocabulary, and this is evidenced in both his poetry and his other work. So sometimes he used words that were not commonly used at the time, and in The Raven, he uses ancient and poetic language that seems quite befitting, since the poem is about a man that spends his time reading books of forgotten lore. Now, learning these words might help give some more sense to the poem. For example, a seraphim, which is in the verse number 14. This is one of the six-winged angels standing in the presence of God. And here, it is used to illustrate the invisible way that a scent spreads in a room. Nepenthe is a potion that was used by ancients to induce forgetfulness of pain or sorrow. Balm in Gilead is a soothing ointment made in a region in Palestine called Gilead, which is at the east of the Jordan River. Aden, from the 16th verse, is an Arabic word for Eden or paradise. So after hearing this analysis, perhaps you want to go back and listen to the poem one more time to see if you have gained some better understanding of its meaning. Now, we're almost at the end of our podcast, and in this last part, I just want to talk about the importance of Poe's work, his legacy, and his influence in other writers, and also demystify one of the most common assumptions about Poe. Poe's work as an editor, a poet, and a critic had a profound impact on American literature. He is one of the first American writers to become a major figure in world literature, and his work is exemplary even when held to the standards of any genre. So while Poe is best known for being the originator of horror thrillers, he has also fashioned the literary genre of detective fiction. And to further this even more, many anthologies credit him as the architect of the modern short story. To that end, his importance goes to the fact that he has five of the most likely best short stories ever written. Because of him, and along with the likes of other authors like Irvin and Hawthorne, Gothicism became a very American art form, hence the term American Gothic. And as a critic, Poe also helped set high standards for American literature, bringing changes in the literature of this period and being one of the first critics to focus primarily on the effect of the style and of the structure in a literary piece. As such, he is seen as a forerunner of the movement called Art for Art's Sake. So, Poe really had an influence on both American and non-American writers, and among those were William Faulkner and Fedor Dostoevsky. Faulkner, who is a renowned novelist from the South, will be forever linked to Poe. In his book, The Sound and the Fury, the incestuous relationship between two of the main characters draws a parallel between Poe's own incestuous relationship with his first cousin, Virginia. And in Dostoevsky's novel, Crime and Punishment, the Russian author portrays a man who commits a murder and becomes increasingly guilty because of it, and he finally is urged to confess to the woman he loves. The novel's plot is very similar to Poe's A Telltale Heart. And for those of you who are not familiar with the story depicts a man who commits a murder and becomes deranged by guilt as he hears the heart beating from underneath the floorboards where he stored the body after he killed this man. So, as the father of the detective novel, he also had direct influence on two great English writers, Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes, and Agatha Christie, and closer to home, perhaps even American writer Stephen King. But Poe's influence is not limited to literature, and he also has considerable and long-standing influence in music, and his work has also transcended to television, film, and theater. Films like Halloween, Friday the 13th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, all seem to have connections to Poe's theory of theme, tone, and atmosphere. In music, for instance, there's a lot of influence in classical music, but also in popular music we're probably more familiar with, such as Bob Dylan's song Just Like Tom Tomb's Blues, which makes reference to Rue Morgue Avenue from one of Poe's stories, or the song Nevermore from the English rock band Queen, or even in Britney Spears' concert tour named Dream Within a Dream. And let's not leave Marilyn Manson behind, which he claims that some of his inspiration for his music and art comes from Edgar Allan Poe's work, and has even painted a portrait of Poe. So I know Poe is perceived as being a dark, depressed, mysterious character who was an alcoholic, and he also has been labeled a drug addict. Many biographers think that his life's troubles were the cause of his writing, and although in some form they did wait on it, I'd like to think of him as, some say, a misunderstood romantic. Others believe that it was his drug use that enhanced his imagination, but there's actually a very little evidence that can support that claim. And there are several reasons for this misconception, and one of them is that the characters in Poe's stories did use opium. And this has been projected by some to mean that Poe himself used it, especially since the stories tend to be narrated in the first person. And we also have to take into account his rival Griswold, who tried to smear his image in one of the only biographies available of him at that time. But whether he was or not, and I believe it's not the case from accounts that I've read, I consider Edgar Allan Poe an amazing, amazing, and in capital letters, just amazing writer. In case you don't really know it already, I am a fan. And I go back to reading his stories from time to time, and they continue to keep me engaged and to shock me in many new ways. So just to wrap this up, how about some trivia questions for you? What NFL team is named after Poe's most famous poem? And if you said the Baltimore Ravens, then you guessed it right. And what do you think is the mascot's name? And again, if you said Poe, then you're totally correct. And I want to leave you with some homework, if you're a curious person, that is. You might want to research and find out what a Poe toaster is, and what has become a tradition every year on Poe's birthday in Baltimore. Now, before I say goodbye, don't forget, please show me your support by following me on Twitter at Carmina De Alba, and also looking me up and following me on Facebook and YouTube. You can just type in my full name, that is Carmina, Carmina DeAlba. I hope you have enjoyed this podcast and that you stay tuned for more book talks. I now leave you with a part of the song Nevermore by Queen. There's no living in my life anymore. Book Talks by Carmina, more than just a book review. Go beyond the written word to discover great content and its authors. Insightful excerpts, relevant info, plot summaries, curious information, interviews, discouraging books as classics and bestsellers, biographies, and personal improvement. Book Talks, your audio literary review.